Gareth Jones on Speed News Eisteddfod. In a drive to improve road safety and to lower emissions, in September 23, the Welsh Government introduced a 20 mph speed limit on the vast majority of roads that previously had a 30 mph limit. Public reaction to the new rules has been mixed, but when asked, 12 out of the 10,000 people all called Gareth Jones in the county of Conwy said, "It's not such a big problem, really, because even at 20 mph, traffic in Wales is still at least 10 mph quicker than traffic in that London." Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, and as you know, I moved to Wales some 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and I'm getting used to the idea of living in Wales, moving around in Wales, and probably won't be doing those long drives from London to North Wales like I used to do on the show. So there'll be a bit more stuff from here in North Wales on the programme going forward. As they say, how's your week been? Good? Yeah, mine's been fab, thanks for asking. And I've got a little bit of work to do that I think you'll find rather interesting. I'm off to Birmingham, to the National Exhibition Centre, between April the 23rd and 25th. I'm going because I'm involved in an event called the CV Show. And old friend of the programme, Matthew Eisenegger, is the media partner for the CV Show. So I organised a Zoom meeting with him and asked him to explain what exactly the CV Show is.
The CV Show stands for Commercial Vehicle Show. As the name would imply, it's a melting pot, I think is probably a good way to describe it, of both commercial vehicles, whether it be van or truck, all the ancillary suppliers that sort of go with them. We're in sort of a transitional period at the moment with commercial vehicles, you know, because obviously traditionally we've been very much diesel powered, and to a certain extent with some of the lighter vans petrol powered. We're in this sort of transitional world now where we're moving towards alternative fuels, and particularly battery electric. So that's sort of very much on the agenda. So the show itself is showcasing the technologies, the vehicles, the suppliers, the ancillary and all the other bits and pieces. So it really is any business that's involved in either the running of or the use of trucks and vans really is the place to be. There's about just over 200 exhibitors booked on now, expected footfall of around 15,000 visits. So it's not a small show. It's not a small show at all, actually. And it's coming into its 24th year. It's been going since 2000. We had a year where we postponed because of COVID and the other bits and pieces. So yes, yeah. But it's, you know, a long heritage attached to it.
It is basically the motor show for trucks and vans, isn't it?
Why didn't I say that?
At the NEC, and you've got all the big players, well, many of the big players there, and the big players are Ford, Renault, who else?
Yeah, we've got Ford there. I mean, obviously, they're, well, you know, Ford has a Ford of Great Britain, obviously, with their LCV product. We've got Renault Group UK there that are launching. They've got a couple of launches that I think I'm not going to say too much about, because I don't want to spoil the surprise. Got Maxus there, Harris Maxus, with their range of vehicles. I tell you what is interesting. We've just managed to, just managed to secure a booking with Canoe. Now, Canoe is probably, I don't know if that's a name that you know, but they are battery electric vehicles built in the States, and they are supplying the US Postal Service. Now, this is how committed they are to it. They've put 4 vans on a plane to bring them to the UK.
Wow.
So, you know, it's serious stuff. Because obviously, you know, they've understood the value of what the show's all about, what it means to be part of it.
There is a shift, I think, going on in commercial vehicles at the moment, with more and more people having stuff delivered to their door, whether it's from Amazon or Just Eat or anywhere that they buy their stuff. Stuff is delivered. And that last mile, the stuff that Canoe, and I've seen the Canoe vehicles, they're extraordinary. They look like Mars rovers, or they look like a science fiction design from the 1970s, and very futuristic. The emphasis is changing, isn't it? Not only are very heavy vehicles becoming battery electric or hydrogen, but all vehicles are. It very much mirrors what's going on in the car world, but it's kind of more important because there are more of you than us, aren't there, in terms of trucks and cars?
You're right. I think the car world has gone a little bit before the van or before the commercial vehicle world, but you're absolutely right. You know, all the large LCV manufacturers are all on the battery electric vehicle road now. Some manufacturers are shutting a little bit further down the road. You know, there are vehicles out there now that are hydrogen powered in the LCV world. Mm-hmm. It was very much seen as a sort of last mile, but realistically, when we start looking at the heavy trucks, there's truck manufacturers out there now that have got vehicles that are far more capable of doing, you know, just 30, 40 miles a day. You know, we're pushing 200 kilometres a day now, and that's on urban delivery. You know, heavy truck suits sort of the urban environment, whether that be urban collection or urban delivery. So you will see things like refuse collection vehicles that are very, you know, because the routes that they work are so that, you know, on a Monday they're here too, you know, they know exactly what the distance they're going to be going and importantly how much energy they're going to consume over that day, over that working week. And realistically, you know, unfortunately, we're not in a position yet with heavy trucks to have a long distance charging infrastructure in place. But it does suit businesses that are depot charging. So that can be a heavy truck as well. But within that, so again, the point now where we will be seeing the traditional heavy, you know, tractor unit and trailer combinations coming down, you know, the manufacturer there now with it, you know, but what we're seeing is technology improving, battery technology improving, power improving, range improving. But we've got to remember the show is not just about that. It's about the industry itself. And these future technologies are not going to be for everybody just yet. So again, what it does do, it gives you a nice helicopter overview of what's out there now. Now, obviously, as media partner, we run a magazine called, well, it's a media platform really, called Destination Net Zero. And the arrangement, and as a media partner, we've managed to broker some space to sort of showcase some of the technology that we've been covering in the media, or we'll be about to cover it. And so what we've got in Hall 5 is about 15 solutions, because we've got trailers in there as well. And that's, you know, the trailers are sometimes a forgotten part of it. But what we've got, again, is an overview of, we've got some diesel vehicles there, Euro 6 diesel. So bear in mind, very, very, very compliant. So we've been supported there by Renault Trucks with Euro 6. Now, the one thing about your traditional ICE vehicles, your internal combustion engine vehicles, is obviously the fuel that these vehicles run on. So what we're doing, and what we have covered a lot in the magazine, is about HVO, which is hydro-treated vegetable oil, which immediately, just, it's a drop-in fuel, immediately reduces your CO2 emissions dramatically. So we've got that bit.
So when you say a drop-in fuel, this is a direct alternative to diesel, and all trucks can run on it, or do they need modification?
No, that's what I'm saying, drop-in fuel. You can mix it with diesel, you don't have to be running on that solar, just put it in the tank and away you go, and you know your improvements are immediate. For some businesses, gas, LNG, CNG is a viable alternative. So hopefully you've got an Iveco coming on there. We're talking to another couple of manufacturers as well. I don't want to spoil the surprise.
Okay.
A couple of big announcements to make over this next week. And then moving from there, we've got sort of battery electric vehicle technology, which again is probably more suited to your urban collection and delivery. The other thing that we've got a couple of trailers on there. One is going to be supplied by Schmitz Cargo Bull, which is their SKOE. I've got to remember how to say that properly. Now, that's their proper, fully electric refrigerated trailer. Refrigeration trailers, reefer trailers, normally rely on a small diesel engine at the front to provide the you know, the power to cool. Doesn't. So it's a purely electric solution. And it's got some very, very fancy transmission technology. So basically the wheels, one axle of the wheels is charging a battery, which is charging the refrigeration side of it. We've also got a trailer, which is one of the Mega Cube trailers from SDC. It's a 15.65 metres, I believe it is. So it's a big trailer, double deck. You know, so when we're talking about the efficiency, it's not just necessarily about directly reducing fuel. It's about improving the efficiency, which by implication will improve the fuel. So this thing, behind a normal tractor unit that's run by, you know, HVO, you're getting a lot more loading capacity, a lot more volume for the same tractive power. Do you see what I mean? So then it's all about the efficiency. And this is where the commercial vehicle world is really going. You know, we're blessed that a lot of these commercial vehicles are very, very stylish and great looking. But we've got to bear in mind, It's all in the name. It's commercial.
So it has to work. It has to return a profit. It has to be proven technology. In some ways, exactly. This is a kind of a glimpse into the future that some of us in the car world haven't really got a grip on yet, really.
No, you're right. And as I say, it's moving at such a pace as well. And I think what we've tried to do with Destination at Zero is just try sort of... The one thing I'm immensely proud of is being able to give an overview. You know, so knowledge... You know, a lot of the shows are great to look at. It's great networking. But if we can help an operator make an informed decision about where they want to take their business, then we've done a job. You know, and it may well be that electric is not just for them yet. It may be that going on simple, if HVO is the one thing that they can, and they didn't know about it, then we've served our purpose. We've done our job. But we've got to bear in mind, we're only one part of the show. There's so much more to say there, you know, with the ancillary equipment, with the people that supply in the van market, you know, the purposing of the vehicles, you know, so we've got lots and lots of racking companies and all in them, you know, that will take a basic vehicle and make it into like a plumber's workshop, a central heating engineer's mobile workshop and all these things. So it's really, really good. Really good. Plenty to say.
It's not just for big operators and someone who's about to buy an HGV,
No.
Is for anyone who relies on a commercial vehicle or the infrastructure around it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to bear in mind as well, Gareth, that, you know, even for the, I suppose, single fleet operator, plumber, central heat engineer that is working in the central London, as well as those other cities, there's lots of consideration there about low emission charges and clean air zones. So they need to be able to make a proper decision about what vehicle they to reduce any sort of, as well, you know, so they can actually look at the vehicle but also go around and basically have a vehicle custom made for their requirements, you know. So it really is a place of, so that's, you know, the complete opposite end of the spectrum to what we're talking about. Whether there's an operator that's coming to buy 50 tracks unit.
I can't wait, quite frankly. I know I'm biased because I'm working there and I'll be covering all this with you. But I'm genuinely, as you know, listeners to this programme, interested in what's going on in the commercial vehicle market at the moment. I'm just looking through the list of exhibitors that you have here on the floor plan, and I'm seeing a lot of Chinese names there. They're big players at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, no, they are extremely big players in it. A lot of the supply, you know, some of the smaller componentry is supplied through the Chinese market. And I suppose it demonstrates, well, obviously we spoke about Canoe, you know, Canoe flying vehicles in from the States, Texas. We've got the Chinese there. We've got all kinds of people doing all kinds of things, you know, so it really, really is a sort of a global entity.
Brilliant. Looking forward to it, Matthew, an international exhibition. Remind us of the dates and the location.
The dates are 23rd of April through to the 25th. That's Tuesday to Thursday. It's at the NEC in Birmingham, National Exhibition Centre. Bearing in mind as well, it's a venue that's connected by pretty much all the motorway start and finish of Birmingham. It's got a railway station there, so you can come up from London or you can come from... And it's even got an airport in the back garden. How good's that?
Well, good. I'll fly in on my personal helicopter then. Matthew, looking forward to it, mate. Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, see you in a couple of weeks. See you, Gareth.
Like Matthew Eisenegger said there, the CV show, the commercial vehicle show, is at the NEC in Birmingham, 23rd to the 25th of April, 2024. For more information, go to the website, www.cvshow.com. I will put a link to it on the page for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. I'll be there because I am the official media presenter for the show. So keep an eye on the CV show's social media channels and their website, and you should see a whole bunch of reports from me about some of the interesting vehicles, technology and support services in the world of commercial vehicles at the moment. And man, if you're interested in cars, this is every bit as interesting. I love it. Do you remember in the last episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, I played a remix of a song that we did years ago called The Things Found in Zog's Car? Well, it's prompted a response. I got this message today from Richard Porter. GJ, he messaged me to say, listening to the new podcast this week and was delighted to hear the reprisal of the Stuff in Zog's Car track. The ethereal dub mix somehow worked very well as an accompaniment to driving through the Somerset countryside. Oh, that's nice to know, isn't it? I forgot to tell you a few months ago that whilst rummaging for something else in an old GarageBand file, I found my attempts to make Zog's List into a song. I had about four goes at it, and if memory serves, I didn't like any of them, so gave up. But one of them is, on re-listening, actually all right. I've pulled it into Logic and tidied it up a bit, and I'll send it to you for your amusement. Richard did send it to me for my amusement, and I was amused by it. And I'm thrilled to say, here it is. This is the return, once again, of Richard Porter and Sniff Petrol to Gareth Jones on Speed with the things found in Zog's car, the Pit Stop Boys version.
Okay. One British Sausage Council promotional watch. One broken aftermarket cup holder. One cassette tape of Introducing by DJ Shadow. One electric tyre pump. One mummified apple core. One pair seized and rusty pliers. One pot strawberry yoghurt. One UK atlas, missing the page for Southeast England. Two A to Z London atlases. Two parking tickets, unpaid. Two pairs of sunglasses, slightly broken. Two flyers for fetish clubs in central London.
Don't know where those came from.
One ski glove. Two tyre pressure gauges. Four paper coffee cups. 37 assorted used parking scratch cards and sticky tickets for Brent, Hackney, Fulham, Westminster.
Brent, Hackney, Fulham, Westminster.
Cheap quarter-inch drive socket set. Broken. Leaflet about places to visit in Dorset. Packet of latex gloves, empty. Set of dinosaur stickers, free with the Saturday Guardian. Set of jump leads, incomplete. A third of a packet of pasta shapes, mouldy. 7-inch off-cutter radiator hose. 4 months of bank statements that I've been looking for the last 3 months. Kebab. 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 Sausage Council watch. Slightly broken. Unpaid. Seized and incomplete. Slightly broken. Unpaid. Seized and incomplete. Slightly broken. Unpaid. Seized and incomplete. Slightly broken. Unpaid. Mouldy and sticky.
Things in Zog's car.
Sunglasses.
Things in Zog's car.
Ski glove.
Things in Zog's car.
Pliers.
Things in Zog's car.
Strawberry yogurt.
Things in Zog's car.
Coffee cups.
Things in Zog's car.
Jump leaps.
Things in Zog's car.
Bank statements. Dinosaur stickers.
Things in Zog's car.
Empty, mouldy cassette tapes.
Things in Zog's car.
Empty, mouldy pasta shapes.
Things in Zog's car.
Empty, mouldy latex gloves.
Things in Zog's car.
Empty, mouldy fetish clubs.
Sunglasses. Ski glove. Strawberry yogurt. Coffee cups. Jump leaps. Bank statements. Dinosaur stickers. Flyers. Dorset. London. Northern France. Belgium.
Thanks.
as I was saying earlier on, I've been living in North Wales now for 3 or 4 weeks and, quite frankly, having a lovely time of it. Because whilst I wait for solicitors to cross the I's and dot the T's, is that right, on the paperwork that goes with the house I'm buying up here, I'm staying with a mate, a chap called Phil Williams. And I thought, as chatting with good mates about a subject that we're all passionate about, because that is at the very heart of Gareth Jones on Speed, that I really should introduce you to my mate Phil Williams. He's a passionate and knowledgeable car nut and a tremendous engineer and a lovely man to spend time with. So how would you like to spend a little time with me and Phil? Because last night, I poured a bottle of beer. The two of us sat on the sofa with Flora in between us, but more on who she is later on. And we had a chat about cars, and I recorded it. And I started by asking Phil to tell me about the three cars that he owns at the moment.
Long wheelbase Defender van, short wheelbase Defender pickup, quite heavily modified, and a Skoda Yeti, which is the latest addition.
We have to talk about the Yeti first. We'll come to the two Landys. You know that I'm considering buying a Yeti.
Right.
One of the three perfect cars, I think, for living in this neighbourhood. Because we're down a bit of a track where we are. You need a little bit of ground clearance.
Right.
How are you getting on with the Yeti? I've been driving around with you in it. It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice car. It's very functional. There's not a lot of form there, but it's an incredibly functional car. Economical. Not as cheap as I'd have liked it to be because they're so well-rated and quite popular. But yeah, I'm loving it. I'm getting on all right with it.
And you've bought something with how many miles on it?
It's got just over 200,000 on it. But in its favour, it's had a new clutch, shocks, brakes, Haldex kit on the back axle, a few other bits and pieces. Had quite a bit of money spent on it. New belt, new water pump, stuff like that.
Perfect dog car.
Yeah, and perfect for weekends away for me, I think, because I can take the seats out and sling an airbed in the back of it and sleep in it if I go to see any bands or if I want to go kayaking or camping, you know.
Hey, you got a lifestyle car there. You're having a lifestyle. That's what they talk about, isn't it? All right, your two Landys. The one is a 110 van, isn't
That's
it?
That's right, yeah.
That's for your business.
Yeah, but I use the pickup just because I love it. It's lime green and Cadbury purple. It's got a huge lift on it.
How big, do you know?
It's a 3-inch lift on it.
And the tyres are what? The wheels and tyres?
They're 285 Goodrich mud. So, yeah, it's a massive footprint. If you let a bit of air out of them, they put a huge footprint down, you know. Although I'm not looking forward to replacing them.
Ooh.
The tyres that are on it. When I bought it, it had some Insta Turbo tyres on it, which are just fantastic off the road, but they're unbearable on the tarmac. They really are. They're just so noisy.
But you do actually need a bit of off-road here, as I can testify, because you towed me out of the soft verge twice in one day with that short wheelbase Landy.
Yeah, I think the Goodrich mud tyres are about the best compromise between a proper off-road and an on-road tyre. They're very bearable on the road. But yes, I'm not looking forward to replacing them because I think they're probably about £200, £215 a pop now, so...
But it's a lovely looking thing. It looks like it could do anything.
Yeah, it's very capable off the road. And if I'm driving through Conway in it and there's plenty of people around, it's just a real head turner. Especially it's because I've put a skull on top of the snorkel, which is quite striking. And I quite often get kids and grown-ups pointing at it. Kids are like, "Dad, Dad, Dad, look at that, look at that."
It looks like a Tonka toy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. It does look very robust.
Have you been extremely off-road with it anywhere?
Yes, I have, yeah. It's incredibly capable. It's like I say, especially with Insta Turbo tyres on it. I don't think there's much that would see it off, really. Perhaps a modded SJ410 purely because they're so light and so tiny.
Right, yeah. What was your first car?
Oh, that's an easy one. The first car was £50, and it was you'll never ever see another one. It was a Hillman Imp van that had been chopped and turned into a mini crew cab pickup.
So it had two rows of seats and a van space?
No, it had the two front seats, and then it had like an extra wide parcel shelf in the crew cab part.
Of course.
So you could sit two people facing inwards in the back, so it was still a four-seater. And I would quite often carry two people in the back in the pickup part as well, which you just wouldn't get away with these days, you know.
What year was that? When did you buy it?
I was 17. About 1980, 1981, I bought it, and it was an unfinished custom project, and it was advertised and sold with a seized engine, which turned out to be what had happened was somebody had dropped a locking nut off the point set into the distributor and jammed the distributor, and therefore...
That's all it was?
That's all it was, yeah. I took the distributor off, tipped it upside down, shook the nut out, put it back on, and away it went, yeah.
You're a very good engineer, I can testify, because this beautiful room that we're sitting in, which you brought back from being an old Welsh 18th century barn, 19th century barn?
Yeah, this was the hayloft up here. Yeah.
The hayloft, and now it's the most palatial, mezzanine, lovely place to talk cars, I have to say. So where did you learn your engineering, your motor engineering?
Off my father. My father was a mechanic for many years, so he always fixed his own cars, fixed all the relatives' cars. And not like I was given a choice, but if he had to go and do stuff, I would always have to go and help him.
And what cars did your dad drive? And which
one? Triumphs he liked. He liked Triumphs. He had a Mark 1 Triumph Estate, amongst many other cars, but he loved the Triumphs. And the Mark 1 Triumph Estate was a beautiful car, it really was, you know.
The Mark 1, what, the 2500? 2000
no, 2 litre.
2 litre estate. Yeah. Lovely. Yeah, it was a gorgeous looking thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 2.5, it was a 2.5 pneumatic injection, wasn't it, really? And I'm not sure, but I think Triumph were the first people to do a production car with pneumatic injection. And I think they were up there with the first twin cam in the Dolomite, weren't they?
Was that right? They were the first?
I think so, yeah.
Dolomite. Did you ever have a Dolomite then? Did you follow your dad's footsteps and buy Triumphs? How many cars would you say you've owned over the years?
25 cars, probably. A large number of those. I probably owned 6 Hillman Imps, not all at the same time, but...
Why? Trying to find a good one.
No, because they're just so cheap and cheerful. Cheap, cheerful, easy to fix. And then they've got a bad reputation. People say, oh, stay away from them, they're prone to overheating.
Yeah.
Any car, if it's neglected, is prone to overheating, isn't it, really, you know? But they were all aluminium, weren't they, so they'd have a problem. The head gasket would go and people would drive them round with the head gasket passing. And aluminium block, aluminium head, you know, those gases are going to do some damage, aren't they, you know?
Yeah. Well, it was famously lightweight and made a terrific rally car. Pals of mine used to navigate in an Imp rally car here in the Forest, Clackenog,
right.
And Gwydir and Brennig, all those stages. Do you ever go to the Wales Rally?
Yeah, I used to go loads, and my dad used to drive Rally Imps for Roots Group.
There you go.
998 Rally Imp. Quite a lot of go, really. And I think I was talking to you the other night, and the Hillman Imp engine is really, it's a lightweight version of Coventry Climax.
Yeah, it's got a bit of heritage.
Right. I mean, a Rally Imp need 100 kilos under the bonnet. Really, that's what they need.
Bag of cement.
100 kilos under, a couple of bags of sand, put a bit of weight on the front wheels.
Gareth Jones on Speed News Eisteddfod. Trafnidiaeth Cymru, or Transport for Wales as they're known in English, the organisation that runs the Welsh Rail Network, has recently gone contactless. Our man in the field, Gareth Tom Jones, said, "Contactless? They've been contactless since the start. I've been emailing them, phoning them and messaging them for over 12 months. They are bloody contactless. No one's got back to me."
Gareth Jones on Speed.
Earlier on, you were listening to me chatting to my mate, Phil Williams. He knows a thing or two about cars and engineering. So I thought I should perhaps ask him what the perfect car for North Wales might be. I had an idea. Is it possible to take a Series 1 Lotus Elise and jack it up? You kind of want four-wheel drive on it. Well, OK, what's the cheapest four-wheel drive platform that we could do something with and make it look like a Lotus Elise?
You could get a Disco 1 or a Disco 2, take the body off and put a Lotus Elise body on top of it.
That would look great. Or Yeti. You've got a Haldex rear axle. Let's chop your Yeti.
Depends how off-road you want to go with something, isn't it? You know, they look quite rugged, the Yeti, and the off-road version, it's got sort of fake skid plates on the front and the back, hasn't it?
But yes, yes.
If you took something like that seriously off the road, you'd destroy it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'd destroy it. You can look on YouTube, and there's some Yetis that have been prepped for off-road work, and they do perform incredibly well, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's plastic bumpers and stuff, isn't it? You know, it'd knock the living daylights out of it.
Where are you with EVs? Will you own an EV? Can you charge? You can charge it.
I can't afford one. I can't afford one. But what I do really like, and there's ones down the road, is the Honda E.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really radical and very gorgeous looking car, and Honda seems to have gone down a completely different road to all the other designers. It's got a very different and a very striking look. I really like them. If I could afford an EV and I was going to buy one, I'd probably buy the Honda E.
You like your Hondas?
Yeah, I like the look of them. They say they're very different.
Yeah, the Honda E is interesting. It's not sold as well as they hoped. It hasn't got the greatest range, and it's a very pricey. But you've got a Honda dealership here, haven't you? That's perhaps why you're seeing them around here, because you just don't see them. They're rarer. That brings me to my point about the Yeti, right? The Yeti is inappropriately named, because you don't see the Yeti, right? The abominable snowman's invisible. But I see Yetis everywhere here in Wales. They're all over the place.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine why they would have gone and stopped. It's such a popular car that sold so well. I can't see why they stopped making them, you know?
Yeah. It's got a real following, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was reading today that the second generation Kodiaq, which is the car that's replaced the Yeti in some ways in the Skoda range, starts at £35,000.
Right.
It's a different league of car. It must mean that Skoda are doing something right, you know, to be able to charge a premium for what's perceived to be a quality product.
Yeah, I think they were seen as rubbish for a while, weren't they? But
oh yeah,
the history of Skoda is, you know, they've been making stuff for a lot longer than the majority of car marks, haven't they? You know.
Yeah.
And they do make some incredibly robust machinery, don't they, Skoda, you know?
Yeah, do you remember the Rapid was not a bad rally car? There was the what was it called? The Skoda rally car? I can't get Fulvia. Yeah, the little one, the Fabia.
Right.
They've proven themselves in rallying, and that always has value. I know that you're interested in commercial vehicles or ex-army vehicles.
I am. It's a big bang for your buck.
It really what, if you buy a Chieftain tank?
No, the trucks I like, 4x4s.
All right, what would you have then? And what would you do with it? What would it look like? What would it be? How old would it be? Tell me about the engine. What is it?
I'd buy a Bedford MJ. Old school.
So that's 1950s Bedford Army truck, yeah?
No. MJ, what have we got? The MK, then the MJ. So the MJ was early to mid-70s, I think, they brought those out.
Oh, I know, like the Bedford road trucks of the same period. I know exactly what you mean by that. I was thinking too much earlier, rounded front one.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, not that one. That was at the RJ or something, I can't remember.
The RL. Was the predecessor.
Thank you.
So a lot of people would recognise that as the Green Goddess fire engine.
Of course,
engine.
Yes.
That was the fire engine version of it.
Yeah. But not that. This is the generation that replaced it, squared off 70s grill. Matte green.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bedford.
And I would buy a drop side truck and I'd turn it into a living vehicle, which I've done before.
What did you do last time?
I built a huge Luton box on the back with larch weatherboarding, mahogany rails to fix everything to, and then larch weatherboarding. Everybody that saw it said, my God, that's just the nicest looking living vehicle I've ever seen.
Looked like a Woody, like an American station wagon.
Yeah, it was a stunner. And I put an overhang on the back as well, so that when you put the tailboard down on chains, you could sit out on the tailboard. And
it had a balcony?
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Because this room that we're in, you know, you've got like a mezzanine floor.
Right.
That's essentially a balcony. It's one of your things. It didn't have a metal silver spiral staircase in it like your living room.
No, it didn't.
All right.
I knew some people years ago on the festival circuit that did a Bedford 32-seat coach, and that had a spiral staircase in it that went up to a bedroom, which was a Mark 1 VW van body. Stuck on the roof, and that was the bedroom.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Because with the glass house sort of effect with the van, I know what you mean. It would make it like a viewing platform on an American train, wouldn't it?
And it was very unusual because it was an ex-RAF vehicle and it was a 32-seat Bedford coach body on a Bedford RL chassis, so it was four-wheel drive with twin wheels on the back axle as well, so it would go pretty much anywhere, you know.
What do the Americans call those trail vehicles? There's a name for them now, isn't there? They use them for four-wheel drive campers, effectively.
That's right, yeah.
So what would you do with your 70s Bedford ex-army? Four-wheel drive, twin rear axle again, yeah?
Obviously, I'd go for the single-wheel one.
Single-wheel?
Yeah. I'd turn it into a living vehicle. I'd sell this lot, buy a little patch of woodland somewhere and live in my truck and go off-grid because... It's just the drain owning a property, isn't it, really? That's what I find.
Yeah. What worse than owning a car?
Depends what car you own, isn't it?
Yeah, true enough. So, yeah, what would you do? Have you got vision? You put some kind of balcony on the back again?
I'd do the same thing again. I'd build a Luton box on the back. Because on the military trucks, you've got a gunner or an observer's hole in the top of the cab, so you can link that, so you can get in and out the cab into the back of the body if you put Luton on it, you know?
You've really thought about this, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I've done it before, so...
Yeah.
I've got a photo somewhere. I'll have to try and dig it out and show you. I'm not one for taking photos, but I have got a nice photo of both the Bedfords, actually, but it's the green one in particular that looks so nice.
OK, best car you've ever owned?
Well, it's a few different categories. The best car I ever owned, I think, was probably the first car that I ever owned because I just had so much fun in it and did so many miles in it. It was 50 quid, you know? It had a lot of work done on it. It was a lovely custom project. You know, I'd say you'd never see another one.
Was it purple?
No, it was fire engine red for Ferrari red. White alloy rims, massive big fat wheels and tyres on the back. So it looked very sort of sit up and beg. It had spacers and extenders put on it, flared wheel arches. It had little portholes in what was left of the van body, had orange portholes in it. Bought steering wheel, 8-ball for the gear knob.
The sort of thing you'd see in classic and custom car or car and car conversion magazine in the 70s, yeah?
Yeah, it was lovely. That's probably the best car I've ever owned. The nicest car I've ever owned, comfiest car I've ever owned. I had a couple of Wolseley 6s, and they were well ahead of their time, really. Beautiful car.
I can smell the leather now.
Right. Well, they were velour, actually. Mine were velour seats, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it was lovely.
This is the Land Crab, right?
That's right.
The 3000, yeah.
I know it's 2.2.
Of course it was.
Transverse mounted 2.2 straight six.
Yeah. Giant super mini or super maxi is what it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's a lovely car, so comfy, so quiet. You could get in it, you could do hundreds of miles in it and you would not feel like you'd driven hardly anywhere, you know.
Like being in the lounge.
Right. Yeah, no, the 3-litre version, that was called the Austin 3-litre, I think, and that was a bigger car again than the Wolseley 6.
Oh, of course, yes. Yes, this was the same as the Austin Morris 1800s of the time.
Same shape, but it had the great big chrome grille on the front, of course, like the Princess limousines.
Yep. Oh, Vandenpla, isn't it, sir? Walnut dash.
Yeah, walnut.
Oh, chrome window winders. Yes, I can see it now.
Beautiful car. And I paid a hundred quid for my first for my first one, and it had done 24,000 miles.
It's a lot in them days.
Yeah.
That's funny. That was the best.
The most fun car to drive was I had a Mark One Vitesse, Mark One Triumph Vitesse.
Oh.
And that was a lovely car. If you were doing 95 mile an hour in that Vitesse, it felt like you were doing 195 mile an hour, you know.
Cross-ply tyres, sir?
No, radials.
Good.
On it.
Good. You'll need them.
That was a lovely car, that. And I saw years, I paid 80 quid for that. I sold it for a couple of hundred quid. And then years later, I saw it coming towards me. I was stuck at some temporary traffic lights. And in a stream of traffic coming towards me, I saw it and it had been nut and bolt restored. You know, there was two guys sat in it.
How did you feel about that?
When I saw it, my heart absolutely sank. It was nice to see it done, but if you had somewhere dry where you could keep all these cars, you know, buy a car for 50 quid, what would it be worth today? Yeah.
Well, maybe that's what the Motorsport Lounge is all about.
Right.
There's a venue here, for those of you who don't know listening, in Llandudno, just down the road from where we are in Conwy. It's called the Motorsport Lounge, and it's part garage, part club, part events venue, gig, but they store loads of cars there. And we were there to see, I'm kidding you not, the Welsh Pink Floyd. There's a Welsh Pink Floyd tribute act. Pink spelt the Welsh way, P-I-N-C, and Floyd with a double F, of course. Floyd. Otherwise, with one F in Welsh, it's pronounced Vloyd. Single F is pronounced V. Sorry, I've gone way off topic now. But the point I was going to make was that they store cars there. And we went to see Pink Floyd at the Motorsport Lounge in Llandudno. And there were a row of four cars parked out in the lobby. One of them was a favourite of Richard Porter, is a favourite of Richard Porter, and in fact is the very car that I virtually bought Richard on Gareth Jones on Speed when we gave each other virtual Christmas gifts a few years ago. It was a Metro 6R4 in the computer vision blue and white. And your favourite car was parked next to it, Phil.
It certainly was, yeah. Honda S2000, yeah, beautiful. I've always wanted one, but I've sworn that I'll never own one because I'd spend the rest of my life paying off all the fines, I think.
It's all about the engine, that car, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a cracking engine, but I think as much as it is about the engine, it's a proper track car on the road, really. Double wishbone suspension. Fiercely dangerous car on the road in the wet, really. I think so many of them have been crashed.
Vicky Butler Henderson's favourite car for a long time.
And when they were cheap to buy, 10 years ago, what was £4,000 is probably 12 today.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just going up and up all the time. But I think when they were very cheap to buy, so many of them were picked up just as donor cars because that engine, you know, if you could find a cheap, low-mileage car, you know, for a project car, track car.
Yeah. It'd
be hard to beat, really, you know.
That's just a proper race engine,
isn't
it? Yeah,
I think they reckon that the best thing that you can do to them is turbocharge them and take them up to about 400 horsepower. And then after that, I think it would then just defeat itself, really, with power that was just unnecessary. You know?
Defeat itself. The ancient Welsh art of self-defeat. Slap goch, beat yourself up before your opponent gets to it. I'm reminded of that. Given, you know, unlimited resources, what would you buy? Would it be a Honda S2000?
It would, yeah.
Nothing else?
No, it would be a Honda S2000, yeah. If I had unlimited resources, I'd buy the best one that I could find, take it to a workshop, get it turboed, and keep the rest of the money to pay off all the fines and the insurance claims.
Phil, and also Flora, who's been sat in between us. Flora, sniff the microphone, don't chew it. Flora is not a human, I should point out. She's almost better than human. She's an English Bull Terrier who sat very patiently while I talked to Phil. But Flora, thank you for your patience. Phil, lovely chatting with you, mate. And thank you for letting me stay in your house.
That's fine. You're more than welcome. You're a total gent.
Don't tell anyone. You'll ruin my reputation.
See, he's a very reasonable, very lovely, very mellow chap. It's a pleasure to have him on the programme and a pleasure to live in his house. That's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. Now, because the CV show falls exactly during the production window when I would be recording and publishing Gareth Jones on Speed, there may be a bit of a wobble to the schedule over the next couple of weeks. What I'm probably going to do, if I can, is stick out another episode in 1 week's time so I can focus on the CV show when I'm doing that. But hey, thank you for listening. The next show, who knows, it could be more Phil Williams, it could be Alex and Zog, could be something completely different. Stick around. This was Gareth Jones on Speed, and I was Gareth. See ya, or as we say in Wales, hwyl.
If you enjoyed the show, then please like and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read some lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor the podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.